Cassette 1, Side 2. Unit 3, Section A. Listening. Activity 2. Interview 1.
About 15 years ago, my husband and I bought a windmill near Rotterdam in Holland. We only paid one guilder for it. At that time, people weren't really interested in living in windmills, because they're drafty and there's not a lot of space and they're damp. But we went ahead with our plan and we decided to restore it and make it habitable. Well, this took about 10 years to complete. Fortunately, my husband is a teacher at a technical college, and he got his students from the woodwork and technical departments to help. We had to think very carefully about space, because in fact there's only 7 square meters of room in a windmill. So what we did is we made the ground floor into a dining and kitchen area, and the cellar became the washing machine sort of area, and the bedroom was just sort of under the roof, sort of under the hat of the mill. It's been a very expensive project. I don't think we're ever going to recoup our investment. But despite that, it's a beautiful place to live. We're surrounded by countryside. It's very peaceful. If you've been working all day in Rotterdam, there's nothing like coming home to this tranquil surroundings. There's no cars, which, well, it's wonderful on one side, but on the other, it means that you have to hulk your shopping 200 metres down the dike. But despite all that, we're blissfully happy.
Interview 2.
I was looking for a flat to buy and hunted all over the area. It was extremely depressing because I couldn't afford anything decent. The places within my financial range were either much too small or in a dreadful neighbourhood. Then I saw this ad in the local newspaper for a houseboat. I went round to see it and realised that I'd found the ideal solution to my accommodation problems. I looked around a bit before buying this boat, but there was quite a bit of choice at the time. Oh, things have changed now. Lots of people have done the same as me, and prices have rocketed. It was in really good condition, because the previous owners had done it up really well. I only did a bit of decorating to make it suit my taste, and I had one or two pieces of furniture fitted to make the kitchen and dining room more practical. You have to have things made to measure, of course, because ordinary furniture stores don't cater for boats. There are a great many advantages in living on a boat in the city. The most important, to my mind, is the feeling of space. Well, that may sound odd because the interior is not very big and the ceilings are lower than in a normal home, but there's so much space outside. You don't have neighbours living above or below. At the most, there may be another boat moored nearby, but you don't feel cramped. And you can always move on down the river or onto the canal if you feel like a change of scenery. That's real freedom for you. The whole city is your home, not just the four walls of a building.
Interview 3.
Well, I suppose it's a bit unusual, but I've lived in a railway carriage now for about 2 years. It's a little scary at night because, well, it's on an isolated part of the track and it's never used at all these days. And the surroundings, well, they're really a little bit grim. It's not really that anything has ever happened there. Just that you always feel a little bit insecure and a bit frightened, because it's so isolated. I moved originally because, well, I couldn't afford a house or a flat to rent, and railway carriages, well, they're cheap to buy. They're cold and drafty in the winter, I have to say. We've got a very small bathroom with, well, only very basic plumbing. Kitchen's pretty good. It's quite well equipped, really, I suppose. The children like it. I've got 4 children, and they all like it very much, because, well, there's lots of space outside for them to play, and, well, there's no danger of traffic or trains or anything. And originally, I mean, I could never have afforded a garden, so they're happy about that. I haven't had to do much to it at all, really. Not renovate anything very much. Just a little bit of decorating here and there. I will put thick curtains up for the winter and put some carpets in to keep it a little bit warmer, because it will be very cold. It is a very long way from schools and, all the services. It makes life a bit difficult. I mean, I have to take two buses to take the kids to school, and that's really not very easy.
Unit 3, Section A. Listening. Activity 6. Exam question. You will hear an interview with Peter Mitchell, who lives in a treehouse. Look at the sentences and complete them by writing one or two words in the spaces. Listen carefully. You will hear this piece twice.
Like most children, I was brought up on fairy tales and adventure stories of unexplored rainforest, Tarzan, that sort of thing. Trees were an important part of my childhood. I mean, what child hasn't dreamt of living in a treehouse? I've just turned my dream into a reality, that's all. What first attracted me to this property was the garden and the remarkable variety of trees. And when we finally bought it and moved in 2 years ago, I remember thinking that the magnificent cedar was just asking for a house to be built in it. Some people would say that I haven't grown up and still live in a fairy world. I got the idea of building in the tree when I realized that there weren't enough outbuildings, and to add on a shed would have required planning permission. I really couldn't be bothered to go through all that paperwork. Most of the timber came from a demolition site down the road. That was what really made me get on with it. They were pulling down an old warehouse just a few hundred yards away, and they were burning everything. Well, I thought it was a terrible waste, and went down to collect it in the pickup van. So, in the end, it only cost £500 to build. The main structure didn't take long to put up. I worked on it at the weekend and in the evening when the weather was okay. I only used the house as a workshop at first. I spent so much time up there that I started taking bits and pieces from the house to make it more comfortable. Then I added on another level. Gradually, it just turned into a cozy second home. The great advantage, in my view, is that you really feel you're a part of nature up there. It's hard to imagine you're really right in the middle of a big industrial town. It's very safe, even if sometimes it can be quite frightening when it rocks about in high winds. But at the same time, it is exciting to feel part of the elements. The construction hasn't damaged the tree at all. I was careful not to use nails or restrict the growth of the cedar in any way. The only branches I cut were those which were overhanging the road. For the construction, I used the main branches and sort of built around them. One great advantage, which I particularly appreciated, was that the local authorities haven't interfered, because for the moment you don't need planning permission unless the construction is on the ground.
Unit 4, Section A. Listening. Activity 3. Extract 1.
I've always been a great letter writer. I suppose that's because I was brought up before telephones were commonplace in every home. Even now, I think it's the only really civilized way of staying in contact with old friends. It's also a marvelous way of passing the time, which does pass slowly when you're retired, you know.
Extract 2.
It saves me running up and down stairs to see if he's still asleep. Until we had the intercom unit fitted, I'd run up at least 10 or 15 times a day. It's exhausting.
Extract 3.
Well, I don't really get on with these new gadgets, but everyone in the building trade is using fax machines nowadays, so you see, I didn't have much choice. I went out and bought one. I keep it in my office at home, but it's essentially a professional tool. Although it does come in handy now and again at home for booking the annual holiday, that sort of thing.
Extract 4.
Before I bought it, I used to get so frustrated when the phone rang when I was in the other room and I couldn't get to it in time. Because I'm confined to a wheelchair, it's an absolute lifeline for me. I take it with me all over the house and into the garden. In fact, I'm so used to having it with me that I don't feel safe if I leave it behind.
Extract 5.
I spend hours chatting to my friends when I get fed up with being stuck at home. It makes my parents really mad. They say my phone calls cost them a fortune. It serves them right. They shouldn't live in such a stupid, out-of-the-way place.
Unit 4, Section A, Listening, Activity 5, Exam Question. You will hear someone giving foreign visitors to Britain advice on how to make use of the telephone services in Britain. Take those pictures which show what you should do and put a cross against those which are wrong or are not mentioned. Listen carefully. You will hear this piece twice.
Welcome to Telecom Services in Britain. This is your essential guide to telephone and fax services in Britain, and we look forward to helping you use them successfully and efficiently. Wherever you're from, you can stay in touch with Telecom. If you need to use a public telephone, you will find them in prominent locations in the streets. They are usually made of stainless steel and glass, and are clearly marked. In most boxes, you can use coins. The cheapest call costs 10 pence, but the machine will also take 50 pence pieces and pound coins if you intend to use the phone for a long time or to call long distance. Many phone boxes take plastic phone cards, which you can buy from post offices, news agents, and corner shops for different amounts between £2 and £20. You can also use credit cards, for which there is a minimum charge of 50 pence. If you're calling abroad, the most expensive time to call someone is between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. during the week. The cheapest period is after 8 p.m. on weekdays and all weekends. Make sure you telephone at a time which is appropriate in the country you're calling. There may be a time difference. You can call abroad directly from any phone by dialing 00, followed by the country and area codes, and then the number. The codes for most countries and their major cities can be found in most telephone boxes. If you're calling from a private user's phone rather than a public phone box, you can place your call through the international operator on 155 and ask to be called back with the cost. It will help if you write down the full number before you dial. Dial as carefully as you can, without leaving long pauses between each digit. Your call should be connected in less than a minute. If it isn't, hang up and try again. For more information about telecom services, ask for our booklet, which you can obtain free of charge from any telecom shop. Thank you for calling Telecom. We hope we can help you stay in touch with your family and friends back home.
Unit 4, Section A, Listening, Activity 6, Exam Question. You will hear various people talking. You will hear the people twice. Task 1. Look at the situations listed below. As you listen, decide in what order you hear them mentioned and complete the boxes with the appropriate letter. 3 situations will not be used. Extract 1.
Hi, Mary. Sorry I missed you this morning. I had to rush over to the site. Trouble with the drivers. Can you cancel my appointments for this afternoon, please? Could you also tell them down in accounts that I won't be able to make it today? Try and fix something up for Thursday. If you need to contact me, the site office number is 965-8849. That's 965-8849. I should be there till at least 4. I'll try and stop by at the office before you leave. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Extract 2.
Come along into my office. I want to have a few words with you. Now, sit there and listen carefully to what I have to say. I've had another complaint about your conduct in the classroom. Now, this isn't the first complaint I've had, but I sincerely hope it will be the last for your sake, because I'm not giving you another chance. Have I made myself absolutely clear? I shall be wanting to see your parents, of course. I'm afraid they're going to be very disappointed.
Extract 3.
Do you know what time you'll be back this evening?
I'm not sure. It depends on how long the interview lasts. Oh, dear. I hope things go okay. I know I can do the job. It's just getting that across to them.
Just relax. Don't get yourself worked up. Remember, you've got to convince them that they need you, and you're not going to do that if you're in a state.
Mm.
Have some more toast. It'll make you feel much better. Pass the jam, please. What time's your appointment?
2:30.
Make sure you have a proper lunch. More coffee.
Mm.
And don't get there too early, or you'll have to hang around, and there's nothing worse. You'll manage okay, I'm sure.
Extract 4.
I'm ringing about the ad in the Weekly Herald for second-hand diving equipment.
Yes, that's right. It hasn't gone yet.
Can you tell me exactly what you've got, and how much you're asking?
Well, there are 2 wetsuits, both medium adult sizes, and 1 set of bottles which have been checked out and certified.
How old are the bottles?
I only bought them last summer, so they've hardly been used. I can show you the receipt if you're interested.
When could I come and see the equipment?
Any evening this week would be fine.
Extract 5.
Can I give you a lift? I'm going round via the station.
Oh, yes. That would be lovely.
Put your bag on the back seat. Is your door shut properly?
By the way, I just wanted to tell you how awful I feel about last weekend. I let everyone down, I realise that. I just couldn't face it, standing up in front of so many people. I don't know what came over me. I really am very sorry. I shouldn't have offered to do the presentations in the first place.
Don't worry about it. The committee understands. And anyway, Mrs. Griffiths managed fine. And she thoroughly enjoyed having such a big audience for once.
Well, I just wanted you to know how I feel. I hardly dare show my face at another meeting. Thanks for being so understanding.
Task 2. Look at the aims listed below. As you listen, put the aims in the order in which you hear them mentioned, and complete the boxes with the appropriate letter. 3 aims will not be used. Unit 5, Section A. Listening. Activity 2.
How long have you been a lockkeeper, Mr. Fielder?
Oh dear, let me think. I started when I was 25, so that means I've been at it for 21 years now. Yeah, that's it. 3 years on the Oxford Canal, and the past 18 years here on the Reading Stretch. 21 years in all.
What did you do before you became a lockkeeper?
Well, I used to be an electrician. That's what I trained as.
Do you ever regret leaving your profession?
Oh, no. Absolutely not. Right from the start, I realised this was the one job that I would love to do. I was right.
When is your most busy time of year?
Oh, the summer months. I can easily work a 10-hour day with all the holiday traffic and the upkeep of the flower beds along the side of the lock.
Unit 5, Section A. Listening. Activity 3.
Many people imagine life on the river as uneventful and easygoing. Is this right?
Oh, yes. People often ask me if I ever get bored sitting around here. In fact, I get up at 6 most mornings, and even in winter, when there are fewer boats about, there's a lot to do controlling the water level. When it rains hard in the night, well, I can be up half a dozen times attending to the weir gates. No, I'm afraid the popular image of the pipe-smoking old man leaning against the lock gate waiting for the occasional boat is far from the truth.
Unit 5, Section A. Listening. Activity 4.
I believe you are the founder of Serenading Service. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I started the service 3 years ago when I realised that British people were desperate for romance with a capital R. I thought there would be a clientele for a hired serenader.
Mm.
How did you begin your career as a singer?
I started singing as a choir boy, mm-hmm. and at the age of 10, I was chosen to sing alongside Placido Domingo at a charity do. That's what really got me started on a musical career. I went on to study music, and then I joined an opera company.
Mm-hmm. Unit 5, Section A. Listening. Activity 5.
Where did the idea of serenading come from?
From my studies of Renaissance music, and of course opera, which is full of serenades. On the continent, especially in Spain and Italy, where it still thrives, it is a traditional romantic experience. Over the centuries, university students have turned the serenade into an art form for hire.
What exactly do you do?
Well, usually I'm hired by men to sing love songs to women. Occasionally I'm asked to sing to men, but only very exceptionally.
Unit 5, Section A. Listening. Activity 6.
Can you explain it a bit more?
The service is really a form of intimate alfresco theatre, with love songs, which are guaranteed to melt the hardest hearts. I usually wear a white tie and tails and sing amorous Italian songs. I carry chocolate hearts or flowers, and when there is no balcony available, I sing from trees or fire escapes.
How much do you charge for a serenade?
It depends on whether a musician comes along or not. The basic rate is £450, but it can cost a lot more, especially if I take a gondola and a group of musicians along. Each serenade is different. The idea is to personalize them as much as possible.
How do people react?
That's difficult to say, because you never get the same reaction twice. Mm. Some people are so moved that they burst into tears. It's all very emotional.
Do people ever react badly? Do you ever get used as an unwanted messenger?
That is a major worry. We try to find out as much as we can about our clients to avoid unpleasant situations. You have to be very careful these days because a serenade can be completely misinterpreted. Mm. Once I was even accused of harassment, and a woman called the police. Another time a neighbour called the police to complain about the noise. We really have to be extremely careful and discreet. Mm.
Unit 5, Section A. Listening. Activity 7. Exam question. You will hear a radio interview with a man who is a professional tree climber. Look at the sentences and complete them by writing one or two words in the spaces. Listen carefully. You will hear this piece twice.
How long have you been a tree climber, Mr. Saul?
I've been a tree surgeon and qualified tree climber for the last 30 years.
How did you start?
I was encouraged to climb trees for the Parks Department when I left school at 14 because I was then quite small, only 5 feet, in fact, and not afraid of heights. It was really a natural progression from the things me and my mates got up to out of school.
Did you have any formal training?
Oh, yes. I went to Merristwood College in Surrey. I followed a course on tree care and tree climbing, and I learned the basics of tree climbing there. Techniques like how to throw a rope over the branches of a tree, climb up it and get into a harness, that sort of thing.
What sort of things are you asked to do?
Well, the work is extremely varied. Anything from rescuing cats to conducting surgery on the tree.
What's the most exciting job you've done?
Well, last year I was contacted by Jersey Zoo. They were conducting a bat conservation program, and this involved research work in the Comoros Islands. Apparently, they'd been forced to abandon the project once because they couldn't actually catch any of the fruit bats, which live at the top of fig trees. So they called me in for advice on tree climbing, and I ended up going on the trip. Catching a fruit bat up a tree isn't easy, but it was a great experience. Unfortunately, it's not the sort of thing you do every day.
No. Have you ever fallen out of a tree?
Never. Although I've tackled trees over 100 feet high. Mind you, I wouldn't be around to talk to you if I'd made a habit of falling.
Do you still climb trees?
very rarely. I'm a bit too old for climbing about in trees now. I have a job lecturing on tree climbing at a horticultural college. Of course, if I was asked to return to the Comoros, I'd go like a shot. That's the sort of opportunity I couldn't miss.
That's the end of side 2.